This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton joins us live in studio on Friday afternoons to talk a little history. How are you, sir? How have you been?
Pretty good. How are you doing, man?
Very good. Very busy, you know, crazy busy.
Crazy busy?
We go into these weekends and I'm thinking, oh, you know, I'm great Saturday and Sunday and Friday night. I look forward to it. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to play with the kids and have a good time.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And then Allison never fails. And it's not her fault, but she'll say, oh, and it's only because she's the one who's keeping track, I should say.
Right.
She'll say, oh, but you know, we got to go do this.
Right. And didn't you promise to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. The honey-do list comes out.
And you've got the kids. You got to have them somewhere at 10 o'clock or on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
You better
get moving.
We're going to lunch with the so-and-sos on Sunday. I'm just like, oh, okay. Well, there's the weekend.
But that's wonderful stuff, man. That's all great family stuff.
It's a great problem to have.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. Thank God. Yeah, that's fantastic stuff,
totally.
Man.
What's going on with you?
I've been super busy, too. I was. We were talking just prior in the past week. I've done 3 all-day tours on the bus with the great folks from down at the Senior Center.
Wow. Where have you been going?
Wow. Well, last week at the end of my class, we did an all-day whirlwind tour of Charlottesville and Albemarle County. We went all over the city, myself and Professor Ed Lay from the university.
Oh,
so I talked history and he talked architecture. So we did the original grounds of the university. We did Court Square. Then we went to the farm where Tarleton camped his time here when
totally
he captured
cool.
Charles. Then we went down to Scottsville. We wandered all around Scottsville and talked architecture and history.
How
all
many
over
people
Scottsville.
Did you have with you?
We took about 35 folks. We
filled
up a bus. We didn't have kegs in the back this time, but we filled up a bus. We drove all over the county, had a great time, spent the whole day. And then this past Monday, I think it was, we went to Mount Vernon, and that is awesome.
Yeah, an experience. If you're listening and you haven't been there recently, you need to go because it's totally different.
I had heard and I had read and seen the pictures of the new museum, but I had no idea until I got there.
So much stuff in there.
How unbelievable. You know, I've been in the house a bajillion times, and so when I got up there, we kind of turned everybody loose because there's so much to see, and I went kind of, well, forget about the house. I've been in the house.
Yeah.
And I spent like the whole afternoon in this museum, still didn't see everything. It's incredible.
You know what?
There's like a dozen theaters in this museum.
Yeah.
it's amazing.
And you know what's so cool about Mount Vernon is there's this whole landscape that's still there.
Right.
Unlike Monticello, which was, of course, at one point, 2,000 acres?
5,000
acres. 5,000 acres.
5,000 acres.
That is now other things. And so the landscape of his estate is gone. It's totally transformed.
Right.
But Mount Vernon, so much of it is still there, all the outbuildings and
it
the fields.
It is pretty amazing. And it's because the preservation group, the ladies of Mount Vernon, you know, started in the mid-1800s. So they got a,
versus
you know,
the 1920s for
75-yard head start. 75-year head start on Monticello. Yeah, and so that's what made all the difference in the world. But what's incredible is, you know, I'm walking past and there's this one theater and it says, you know, the Revolutionary War, you know, see Valley Forge, see Princeton and Trenton and see Yorktown. So, of course, I'm there, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I go in there and when they get to the Battle of Trenton where, you know, it was Christmas Day and it was snowing, all of a sudden it's snowing in the theater.
I haven't seen that.
It was snowing in the theater. And, you know, I tried to get some of the flakes and try to figure out what the stuff was, but it was awesome. And every time the cannons went off, the chairs would rattle and they would shake you and stuff.
That's incredible.
It puts you right there. Yeah. You got to go.
Wow.
It's
and of
really
course, that is
super
worth it. Mount Vernon, which is what, you think, 2.5 hours maybe at the most?
Yeah. That's
I mean,
the
right
only
down
thing,
on the river.
That's
you just
the only
get,
thing is the traffic.
Yeah. You got to get, and the traffic isn't between here and Northern Virginia. It's once you get up to Gainesville and try to go across Northern Virginia to the river, that's where the traffic
is. It's when you get to that other country, which is Northern Virginia, where it's traffic.
Where 30% of the electorate is in Virginia. Did you know that?
Unbelievable.
A third of voters in Virginia live in Northern Virginia.
And how much of the wealth of Virginia is
there? Yeah,
that's
a good point,
too. Yeah. And then a couple of days ago, we went to Sailor's Creek and Appomattox. And so we saw the last big battle Of the Civil War fought between Lee's army in Northern Virginia.
What's in Appomattox to see? Because I've never been there.
Oh, man, it's fantastic. It's this little preserved village. And when we got there, the day was absolutely perfect. It was the bluest sky I'd ever seen. And they've got probably, I don't know, a dozen, 15 of the structures preserved or reconstructed, and with all of the snake rail fences and the post and rail fences and everything. And
a little Williamsburg type of thing.
It's just gorgeous. Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous. You know, you can see the actual the
and
house, the McLean.
Quality exhibits and tours.
Absolutely,
that are worth the drive.
Yeah, absolutely quality.
So it's worth the drive down there, you think?
Absolutely. And now that Lynchburg has a really nice bypass around the eastern end,
yeah,
it's
I've been
easy
on it.
To get to Appomattox. So you just head to Lynchburg, and you go around that bypass, which goes to the east of Lynchburg.
Takes you right through Liberty University.
That's right. And then all of a sudden, you'll see a sign that says 460 East Appomattox, and it's only like another 15-20 minutes after that. It's just
really?
Right there.
It's
yeah,
that
it's
close?
Easy. Yeah, it's easy.
Wow, I had no idea it was that close.
Yeah, it's close.
How about
so that?
That
was really, really nice.
We're talking with local author and historian Rick Britton. You can check him out online at rickbritton, BRITTON.com. Frank is on the line in Charlottesville. Frank, happy Friday. Go right
happy
ahead.
Happy Friday to you. I got a question for Rick. On Afton Mountain, when one goes there to look at the beautiful view,
yep.
Read this sign about Thomas Jefferson and the University of Virginia being located in Charlottesville, and I just assumed always that was a done deal, but apparently it wasn't.
That's
he
right.
He had to really fight for that to be located in Charlottesville with the legislature and other people
that's
leaders
right.
in Virginia. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, that's a fantastic question, and what that sign is about is the Rockfish Gap Commission, and they put together the legislature in 1818, put together a commission to decide. They agreed that there was going to be a University of Virginia, a state university. So they had to put together a commission to decide, well, where was that going to be? William and Mary, which had already been in existence for a while, kind of already thought they were the University of Virginia. But a lot of folks, Jefferson included, didn't like the location. Everybody understood that that part of the Tidewater with all the swamps nearby was unhealthy. They didn't understand why, but a lot of people got sick and they knew it was unhealthy. So William and Mary wanted to be the University of Virginia. There was an organization in Stanton. They had a guy out there with a lot of money who was willing to put up the money to build a university there. So Stanton was vying for it. And surprise, surprise, Washington College in Little Lexington actually predates the University of Virginia, what's today Washington and Lee. So they were also vying for it. So they met up there. They made the mistake, of course, of putting Mr. Jefferson in charge of this commission. So naturally, he's going to argue for Central College, which was already under construction for 1 year, within sights of his telescopes from Monticello Mountain, where he can supervise the construction. And so he gets up there with a commission, and it was in this old tavern. It's a great story. Jefferson shows up with this incredible map of Virginia on cardboard. It was fairly large, and he flops this down on the table in front of the other commissioners and proves to them not only was Charlottesville at the time closest to the geographic center of Virginia, which is pretty important if you're going to have a state university, but almost exactly at the time in the population center of Virginia. And of course, you know, it's kind of hard to argue with Mr. Jefferson when he, you know, he gets all of his facts in a row, which he does very often. It's kind of hard to argue with him.
And he very cleverly named his spec school that he was building Central College.
Central College.
As advertising to the rest of the world that
right.
this is in Central Virginia.
Right. Did he make the point?
Yeah.
Central College.
Exactly.
Central Virginia.
Because he
right.
knew in Richmond they're looking for a central place to locate the university.
Right, that's right.
So that's Central the story, College. Frank. Frank, you still with us?
Oh, Frank hung up. I hope you like that, Frank. Thanks for calling. That was a great question, man. Thanks for calling. But listen, I wanted to tell everybody Mount Vernon trip was part of a series I've got going on. It's called Historic Homes of Virginia. And next month, on November 17th, we're going up to Montpelier. And Montpelier's got all kinds of new stuff up there, too, to see. Of course, they've taken away everything that the DuPonts built on top of the home of James and Dolly Madison.
It looks great.
So, yeah, and it looks nice, but I haven't been inside. I'm really eager to see it. So if you're interested in coming, That's all day on November 17th. We're going to go up there. We're going to eat in Orange. We're going to see the James Madison Museum, which is right in downtown Orange, and maybe another museum too. Call the folks at the Senior Center Travel Office at 974-6538.
We're talking with local historian and author Rick Britton. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, the Emancipation Proclamation. This is Charlottesville right now. We're talking with Rick Britton, local author and historian, and you wanted to talk about the Emancipation Proclamation?
I did, because, you know, last week we did a quiz, and one of the questions was, in 1860, was Delaware a slave state? And, of course, well, the answer is yes, Delaware was a slave state. And you asked me really quickly, and if you remember, we were moving along, the quizzes go really fast.
Or yeah, I asked you sort of an aside.
You did, and without thinking, you asked me, so the Emancipation Proclamation ended slavery in Delaware, and we were kind of moving on to the next question. So without thinking, I said yes, and we moved on to the next one. But it just shows you the great listenership that you've got on this show, Coy.
Oh, yeah. Smart people listen to this show.
Because a guy by the name of Miles Fowler, and I've met him a couple of times. Hi, Miles.
Way to go, Miles.
I hope you're listening. Miles wrote both of us and said, hey, guys, that's wrong. And of course, he's right.
Yeah.
And it was funny. I knew the moment that I had said yes, you know, but we moved on. I knew I'd made a mistake. It's fascinating. And the reason I wanted to talk about this is because it's probably the most misunderstood aspect of the Lincoln administration. And it's funny because Lincoln thought that this would be the keynote. He thought that this would be the biggest thing in his presidency. You know, it took effect January 1st, 1863. He freed 3 million slaves in the rebel states of the Confederacy. He declared to be thenceforward and forever free. But people have a lot of problems understanding, and after the Civil War and even until recently, people attack it and ask a lot of questions about the Emancipation Proclamation. For example, why did Lincoln take so long? You know, we know he was anti-slavery. He was anti-slavery way before the war. He said so many times. Why did it take him so long? Why was it 1863 that this thing took effect?
Well into the war. Yeah.
Right, well into the war.
And it was just the Confederacy. It wasn't Delaware.
Right. Why is it so incomplete? Here's another attack against the Emancipation Proclamation. Why was it incomplete? Emancipation freed only the slaves that were within Confederate territory. In other words, in the places where Abraham Lincoln had absolutely no power because of the war, that's where they were freed. And they weren't freed in any of the border states, the slave states, that were still in the Union. And this confuses a lot of folks. We need to remember that not all of the slave states seceded. Delaware was a slave state, didn't secede from the Union. Maryland was a slave state. Lincoln made sure by arresting some of the legislators that it could not secede from the Union, so it remained in the Union. Kentucky was a slave state, technically did not secede. Missouri was a slave state, so at least four slave states remained in the Union. So people ask, well, why weren't the slaves automatically freed in those border states? And another thing, why people attack it, why was it so bland? When you read it, it doesn't have the kind of language, the beautiful language of the Gettysburg Address or the second inaugural. And everybody who hears the Gettysburg Address and knows it realizes this man, like Thomas Jefferson, had an amazing capacity with the English language. He really did. He knew how to turn a phrase. Why is this thing so bland? It was even attacked by the London Times. And here's a direct quote from the London Times right after it came out. Where he has no power, Mr. Lincoln will set the Negroes free. Where he retains power, he will consider them as slaves. The nail right on the head. It was attacked for other reasons, too. People said until recently, you know, historians have been writing about how his only real concern in waging the Civil War was the restoration of the Union, making the American economy safe for whites, not freedom and equality for blacks. People say, rightfully, that the Emancipation Proclamation freed no one because he did not have the power to do what he was saying he did. In other words, he freed them in the place where the Confederate forces were still in power, where his men were not, where the Union soldiers
Rick,
were not.
Rick, I remember reading somewhere where it was a war tactic, that it was a way to try to win the war, to encourage slaves to revolt.
And this is what I'm getting at. If you understand the actual circumstances, you realize why he did what he did. For example, slavery, making someone physical property, That was state laws. Those were enacted by states, not the federal government. The federal courts, if he had tried to do a blanket emancipation in those other four states, he would have opened up a firestorm of litigation against him and against his government. The states would have reacted against that. The federal courts had been stocked prior to the war with a lot of Southerners who were fairly pro-slavery in their leanings. So you have to wonder what would have happened with that. On top of everything, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court at the time was Roger B. Taney. He was the man who had issued the decision in Dred Scott, basically saying that the federal government did not have the right to touch slaves in the territories. So you have to wonder, even if it went to the Supreme Court at the time of the Civil War, if it would have been upheld, if he tried to do a blanket emancipation. Congress tried to emancipate the slaves during the war. They passed a Confiscation Act in 1862, which didn't work all that well. And this led to two federal officers, John Charles Fremont, who was in command in Missouri, and Major General David Hunter, who was in command of the coast of South Carolina, to issue edicts freeing all the slaves in South Carolina and Missouri. Of course, they didn't have control of all those places, so Lincoln had to slap those back down. Those just weren't going to stand for the reasons that I just mentioned. So he revoked those. Another problem at the time was that the commander-in-chief, the man in charge of the federal armies, was Major General George Brinton McClellan. Remember, in 1864, he ended up running on the Democratic ticket that was conciliatory, that might have ended the war. McClellan was a Democrat. He was not against prosecuting the war to its utmost. He was actually for taking it easy on the Southern citizens. And this I just learned and amazed me. When Lincoln went to visit McClellan at Harrison's Landing on the James River right after the 7 days battles, McClellan issued an ultimatum to his president. Now listen to this. This is amazing to think that an officer would do this to the president of the United States. He told Lincoln, "Do nothing about slavery or the army will no longer fight for you." And when you think about that, the gall that the commander of the federal forces would say that to his president, the man who had put him in that position, it's really amazing. So Lincoln had to do something that would encourage the border states to slowly emancipate their slaves. And he had to do something, as you said, using his power of martial law, the power of the presidency as a martial law, to eventually move towards emancipation.
Rick Britton, you can check him out online at rickbritton.com. Thank you, Rick.
You're welcome. Thanks, man.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit sevillepodcast.com for more.